When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, listener mail. This is Robert Lamb.
And this is Joe McCormick. And it's Monday, the day of each week that we read back some messages from the mailbag. If you are a listener to Stuff to Blow Your Mind and you've never gotten in touch before, why not give it a try? You can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com. All sorts of messages are welcome. If you've got feedback on a previous episode, if you want to add something to our comments or share a thought you had, if you have corrections, you can send them on in. But also, just if you want to share something you think we'd be interested in, send it our way. And also, just saying hi is fine, too.
Yeah, and if you want to connect with us other ways, I should point out that we do have a Discord server, Discord page, whatever you want to call it. I guess it's a server. So if you would like to appear on that and interact with other listeners there, we'll just email us. We'll send you the link for that. We're also on the Facebook group, the Stuff to Blow Your Mind discussion module. And you can, if you're on Facebook, you can easily obtain access to that. And then just for Weird House Cinema, we're on letterboxd.com. It's letterboxd.com. And that's mostly we just use an account there, Weird House, to log all of the movies we've watched for Weird House Cinema. Not a lot of commenting going on there for us, but if you comment there, I'll probably see it.
Oh, hey, one more administrative note, because why not? Not too long ago, we were told by our people here at the company that some of you out there, some listeners, may have been subscribed to Stuff to Blow Your Mind and had auto downloads enabled. So you thought you were supposed to get new episodes, but for various reasons, one of them maybe being if you hadn't listened to one of the newest episodes in the feed for a while, maybe the five most recent episodes, the platform you listen through may have turned off your automatic downloads, in which case you're no longer getting our new shows, even though we are still publishing. If you think that may have happened to you, go in and check just to make sure that you do have auto downloads enabled, of course, if that is what you want. And one way to try to avoid that happening in the future is to, if you can, be relatively current on listening, to try to listen to at least one of the five most recent episodes at any given time. But then again, I mean, you know, we're not trying to constrict how you listen to the show. If you listen at all, we're grateful and we really do appreciate it. So do it the way you want it. But to try to avoid weird technical glitches, that is apparently one thing you can do.
And before we get into the listener mail, I'm also going to note that we're recording this on March 14th. So a lot of times we end up recording far closer to the publication date. So just bear that in mind. If you've sent in an email after March 14th, or even just late in the day on March 14th, we probably haven't seen it yet. And that's one of many reasons we may not be reading it in this episode. The other reason could be all the cursing. So, try and keep the language clean.
Okay, I think that does it for preliminary business. I'm going to kick things off with a message from Jeremy, which is a follow-up to a message featured on last week's episode. So on last Monday's listener mail, Jeremy got in touch to share with us that just as he was listening to our episodes on Finn McCool during a passage in which we were describing the Giant's Causeway, he drove past an art installation that appeared to be modeled on the Giant's Causeway, raising questions, of course, about whether we were sort of lathe of heavening Jeremy's environment through the internet. Anyway, we tried to figure out from Jeremy's photo, which he attached in the email, where the sculpture was and who made it, but no luck. So Jeremy wrote back in to fill us in. Turns out the photo was from the Babraham Research Campus, which is a laboratory campus south of Cambridge in England. And Jeremy writes as follows. Hello, Robert and Joe. Thank you for reading out my email. Since you appeared fascinated, I investigated further and found the following about the columns, referring to the sculpture. Apparently, the artwork is called Hive and is designed to represent honeycomb rather than the basalt columns, and is linked to the bioscience nature of the research going on at the campus. Best regards, Jeremy. P.S. No gray whales were sighted, unfortunately. So I looked into this a little more. The sculpture, it's called Hive. It is made to resemble honeycomb or beehive, but it also apparently is modeled on the Giant's Causeway. So it's both at the same time. It's by an artist named Tanya Kovats. And I was reading from the website for the installation, which says, quote, from her studio in Devon, Kovats cast more than 250 concrete hexagons that resemble the basalt formations of the Giant's Causeway, as well as the shapes crafted in beehives. The work is completed by a wildflower meadow and ribbon orchard of fruit trees, all of which work together to attract solitary bees with places to rest and feed throughout the growing calendar. So anyway, very nice sculpture. I like that it's trying to be a little bit geological and biological at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's neat to know because I mean, even in my experience, sometimes you drive past some sort of cool roadside art and you never really know the details on what's going on there. You don't know what the artist's intent is. So here we seem to have finally received the full story.
I mean, I guess it wouldn't be advisable to start trying to like Google art installation details while you're driving past.
Oh, no. All right. Here's one that comes to us from Tim. Tim writes in and says, dear Joe and Robert, first of all, thank you very much for everything you do. I have been listening for years, and it's always a delight. I'm writing to you today because of your episode on the gray whale. You mentioned a book by Mark Carwardine quite a lot, and I just wanted to inform you that he is best known for his work with the incomparable Douglas Adams. Together, they traveled the world trying to find some of the rarest still-living animals. I remember the kiwi and the baiji. This would be the baiji. This is the Yangtze River dolphin. Mm-hmm. The resulting book is Last Chance to See, and I highly recommend it. They even made a TV show where Carwardine visited some of the animals a couple of years ago in the company of Stephen Fry. Very watchable, obviously. Thanks for all you do. Please keep it up. Greetings from Germany, Tim.
Now, if I understand correctly, I think the original book by Carwardine and Douglas Adams was from maybe like the late 80s or something. But then there was this follow-up television show from the more recently, certainly 21st century. And the main thing I remember, though I haven't seen it in full, there was at least one viral moment from the show with Stephen Fry. Because one person involved with the show, it might have been Mark Carwardine himself, they found a rare tropical bird that was trying to mate with his head.
Oh, yes, I do remember this going viral. Yeah. Mark Carwardine is a British zoologist. And if you want to learn more about his work, he has a website, markcarwardine.com. That's CARWARDINE. And it has some links to some of the books, including the Whales, Dolphins, and Porpoises books, a book that I was referencing. Looks like there's a relatively new edition of Last Chance to See out with a foreword by Stephen Fry. He's been involved in a number of great projects, a lot of great wildlife photography and more.
I just looked it up, and I think the rare parrot that was trying to mate with his head was the kakapo.
Oh, okay, yes. A very spirited animal.
also known as the owl parrot.
Yeah, this bird came up fairly recently on the show. I think we were talking about, I can't remember if it was a listener mail or if it came up in the context of another episode, but highly intelligent parrot species, sometimes wrecks cars. Yes, it was a listener mail. Someone had written in about one of these animals tormenting their parents, I think.
Okay, this next message is from Mike. This one's long, so I don't know. We might want to break this up partway through or something. But this is a fantastic message about firsthand experience with whales. So I wanted to feature as much of it as we could. Mike says, "Hello, Robert and Joe. Apologize for the length here. After listening to your whale episodes, I wanted to write in about my whale experience. I live in Santa Cruz, California. We are located right on the northern edge of the Monterey Bay. Our waters host many marine mammals, including various pinnipeds, sea otters, and, of course, whales. We're a major hub for gray whales, and I've seen them as well as a blue whale, humpback whales, and orcas."
Nice.
"I am an avid surfer, and that puts me in close proximity to many of these creatures on a daily basis. It's not uncommon for me to find myself next to otters, sea lions, possibly even an elephant seal in the water. As for whales, the blues and orcas don't really come in that close to shore, but the humpbacks and grays can get very close to the surf zone. At the right time of the year, it's quite common to see them feeding or just engaged in whale leisure just offshore. On one occasion, I was out surfing when significant whale feeding was taking place. These were clearly humpbacks engaged in what's known as lunge feeding. Unlike the way that grays scoop food out of the bottom," and that's referring to the feeding behavior we talked about in our gray whale series, where they'll like slam their head down into the ocean floor and scoop up sediment to filter organisms out of it. Back to Mike's message. "The humpbacks engage in more active pursuit of free swimming food. Lunge feeding involves the whales cooperating with each other to herd small fish, like sardines, into a tight bait ball. Then they take turns swimming up through the bait ball from below with their mouths agape. It's a real spectacle as the feeding whale will breach the surface, often to great heights, with their mouth agape. You really get a good look at these massive creatures as they slam their mouths shut, simultaneously ejecting vast quantities of water and crashing back down. As the feeding whale breaches, they tend to push a lot of the bait fish to the surface. This draws in seabirds by the hundreds as the fish are easy pickings for them. On this particular day, multiple whales were breaching over and over. From where I was sitting in the water, I had a good view, but still felt quite a safe distance from the activity. For the most part, all this activity takes place in deeper water outside of the surfing area. At one point, however, I noticed that the birds had all taken up a position directly overhead. I am well aware that the birds know exactly where the whales are at all times. The birds above surely meant the whales were below me. I definitely did not want to be there. I moved to paddle in closer to shore, but it was too late. I felt a strange disturbance in the water, unlike anything I had felt before. The water started swelling up as though the ocean was filling up from below. The birds rained down from the sky all around me. Sardines began to explode from the water by the hundreds. I was in the worst possible position. I imagine that whale charging up from the depths with its huge mouth gaping. I didn't think it would eat me, as I've heard that a humpback's throat is actually only wide enough to swallow a few small fish at a time. I was very worried that it could violently thrash me around should I accidentally end up in its mouth, or that it could breach near me and come crashing down on me. Miraculously, the chaos stopped. The water calmed down. The sardines stopped emerging. The birds relaxed. No whale lunged out of the water." Okay, intermission. Rob, do you want to take over at this point?
Yes, hand is on the tag rope. Here we go.
Okay.
"All right. Instead, three whales surfaced not far from me. One aimed directly at me. It advanced and, with seeming intent, pushed me aside with its snout, or bow. I don't know what the proper term for the front of a whale is. It's not the nose. That's right. A humpback whale swam up to me and gave me a shove. It was similar to having a good-sized boat passing too close. There was enough wake from the whale to kind of drag me along in the same direction. As the whale brushed past, it rolled a bit so that it could align its eye with my face. There I was sitting in the water, face to eye with this whale. Now, I may be bringing my own preconceptions to the situation, but it feels like there's something deeply powerful in that gaze. Behind those eyes burned an intellect that seems curious and analytical. It seemed more knowing than, say, a sea lion that might be looking at me. No disrespect to sea lions, as they are amazing in their own right. I felt like I was being sized up, and it felt like the whale was intentionally looking me in the face as if to make sure that I noticed it. I really got the distinct impression that it was on some level trying to reason with me. Its reasoning was, "Do you mind? We're working here," or something similar. It was simultaneously the most magical and terrifying thing I have ever experienced. It's hard to really understand how huge and powerful these animals are until you were in the water with them and totally at their mercy. As Robert noted, recounting his experiences in Mexico, they are surprisingly fast and agile, and you really have to see them in person to fully appreciate the power. Likewise, it's hard to really understand that weird connection that one feels when they look into the eyes of another intelligent species until you are there. Note, I don't recommend that people try to get in the water with the whales and replicate this experience. I was there accidentally. I now move back towards the shore a lot sooner when I see this feeding happening. Clearly, my presence disrupted the feeding of this whale. I don't know if it got another turn or the other whales were like, "Sorry, back to the end of the line, it's my turn to lunge the bait ball." For all I know, I might have ruined this whale's day. However, as much as I try to stay out of their way, I still seem to cross paths with them pretty regularly. Since that experience, whales have unexpectedly surfaced right next to me many times. It's quite possible that some of the whales I've seen were the very same whales Robert saw in Mexico. Thanks for reading and putting out such a great show, Mike. Oh, and then Mike has a P.S. here. P.S. The Monterey Bay, as seen from Santa Cruz, is home to one of the most incredible and persistent displays of Fata Morgana around, especially in the summer when we have warm, still air and cold water. The distant shores often consist of these phantom shapes that rise and change throughout the day. It's quite common to see distant structures on the far shore, repeated and inverted. Just one more bit of Stuff to Blow Your Mind magic that's here.
Wow, what a fantastic message. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, that was wonderful. I did not have the exact same experience here, but yeah, to the extent that our experiences line up, I totally agree with everything that Mike shared about looking into the whale's eye, being in close proximity to one of these magnificent organisms. It's amazing.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it.
brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Okay, this next message is in response to our episodes on Horror Vacui and some previous listener mail. This is from Gary, and it's about, well, we got a message from a listener a couple of Mondays ago about pages in documents and books that are labeled "this page intentionally left blank." So Gary says, "Hi, Robert and Joe, just listening to your listener mail episode where you talked about blank pages. I was instantly reminded of the novel Tristram Shandy by Lawrence Stern, published in 1759, which famously has a blank page in it where Stern invites the reader to use it to describe a character. Big fan of the show. Many thanks for making such a fun and interesting podcast. Best wishes, Gary." This is a great find, Gary. Yeah, good literary reference. And by the way, I knew when people talk about this book, they always shorten the title to just the name Tristram Shandy. But for humor's sake, I do like the full title, which is "The Life and Opinions of Tristram Shandy, Gentleman." So you got to know the opinions. But anyway, I'm going to read the paragraph that leads straight into this blank page. I think what's going on here in the book is the narrator here is describing a character that somebody is falling in love with. So they are smitten. And it says, chapter 38, "To conceive this right, call for pen and ink. Here's paper ready to your hand. Sit down, sir. Paint her to your own mind, as like your mistress as you can, as unlike your wife as your conscience will let you. 'Tis all one to me. Please but your own fancy in it." And then there's just a blank page. It's page 147 of this volume.
I wonder to what extent this is adapted in the film. Maybe it is.
Well, they just show a blank page. It's like, picture as unlike your wife as your conscience will allow.
Yeah, you kind of have like a little intermission there. Like, where, I don't know. They might have. It seems like a clever sort of movie. Maybe they did.
It's interesting that this is a very experimental kind of thing to occur in a book from the middle of the 18th century. But I know that, though I've never read it in full, Tristram Shandy does have that reputation in general. It's sort of considered to be a kind of ahead of its time book in terms of weird experimental forms and literary conventions. I think it has like a lot of stream of consciousness stuff in it, which was obviously not common of the novels or romances of the time. It's sort of, I think, thought of as a proto-modernist novel. But I also like how this looks ahead to the way characters are realized in many video games of today, where you can like build your own characters. You just, you know, yeah, they don't come pre-written for you. You draw them for yourself.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, and of course, you still see games go both ways. But yeah, there's a certain power in being able to decide exactly what a character looks like. You know, and I think I've probably mentioned this before, but I think we often do this ourselves. And I know I did this more when I was a younger reader, where I would sort of decide for myself what a character looked like and then go with it. But then I would get irritated if halfway through the book, the author just casually mentioned, oh, this character has a mustache, or this character had, you know, any description like that. Well, now you've completely thrown me off. I already had this part cast, and now you're giving me additional information.
Yeah, you rebel against the author. This is not your character anymore. It's mine now. I get to decide what they look like.
I'm curious. I haven't thought about this in a while, but yeah, I used to, when I was a young reader, reading like full-length novels for the first time, I would kind of go through and I would actually cast the characters often with particular actors, and I would decide ahead of time who was playing what part. And I don't really do that anymore. Occasionally, I'll catch myself kind of casting a character or sort of course correcting. And maybe even at times, if there's some confusing characters going on, I'll do a little bit of that to try and keep things straight in my head. But not like I did when I was younger. And of course, if you're reading a book that there's already a movie version, and they're kind of doing that for you. And maybe that's where that activity came from. All right. Well, it's pinball wizard time because we have a great bit of Weird House Cinema listener mail. This is gonna be the last one we read in this episode, but it's a weighty one. So here we go. From Zach. Dear Joe and Robert, I've been meaning to get in touch for a while. I'm a massive fan of Weird House Cinema, and I just love the verbal imagery you concoct for old and weird movies. I must admit, I haven't seen half of the films you talk about, but your elegant descriptions make me feel like I have. I was inspired to experience The Super Inframan with my family because of the revered tones expressed in your podcast. I can't thank you enough for the recommendation. Not only did I personally delight in the colors and textures of that masterpiece, but my family all gained something special from the experience. My two little ladies still talk about seeing the zippers on those amazing rubber suits, a nuance that is lost with today's seamless computer wizardry.
Well, that fills my heart with gladness. You know, not many of the movies we talk about on Weird House are not for everyone, but Inframan, I think that's the exception. That's just a movie that I think everybody should see and nearly everyone would love.
Yeah, yeah. And it is great to see. I see this with my own son. I've talked about this several times, I'm sure. But, you know, where they're seeing through effects, but sometimes they're able to experience effects that are not absolutely pristine. Mm-hmm. Despite being exposed to some really amazing modern effects. So it's great when they can appreciate the older stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, continuing the email, your recent review of Clash of the Titans, one of my all-time favorite stop-motion animation / Ray Harryhausen flicks, spurred me on to reach out. I'm not sure whether you're aware, but there is an interesting correlation between B-movies and all-time classic pinball machines. Because pinball was massive in the 60s through the 90s, anything and everything could become a theme for a pinball machine, so original themes were common. Licensing is more popular today than it was back then, and so some unusual choices were made for games. Because of the sheer number of games pumped out, not all pinball machines were particularly great. Some, however, are regarded as timeless. Primarily, after hearing of your particular fondness for the film Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger, I believe Joe owned it on VHS.
I think I had a slyly pirated version on VHS.
You'll hopefully be delighted to know that the accompanying pinball machine is revered as an all-time classic. The pinball company Gottlieb made hundreds of games back in its heyday, but this 1978 beauty is something special. It has the unique feature of two sets of double or inline flippers, is a fast and brutal game, and is one that I own and love.
Well, Rob, I had to dig up some pictures and paste them in the outline here for you to look at. So I love the artwork on the, whatever it's called, the backboard where it shows the scores. We have here some illustrations that only marginally resemble the characters in the movie, but we've got the evil sorceress Queen Zenobia. We've got the bronze automaton of a minotaur shape called the Minotaur. He's a robot bullhead. We've got Sinbad here with his sword raised, standing in front of the princess. I think her name is Farah or something, and that's the Jane Seymour in the movie, I believe. And then smoke rising in the background. So it's beautifully painted. And then when you look at the actual, I don't know what you call it, the play space or something.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But the thing I didn't realize exactly what, Zach was talking about here with the idea of double flippers or inline flippers, but they're flippers that when they are not activated, they form a straight line. It's the line that makes a kind of V at the bottom of the pinball space where the ball will roll down into the hole at the bottom. But when you activate them, I'm doing a terrible job of explaining this, but instead of just having one pair of flippers down at the bottom of that V, the whole V is made of flippers. So there's four flippers, and when you flip them, both of them flip up on each side.
Yeah. Now that I see it, I see a picture of it here in our notes. I totally get it. But yeah, this is a beautiful machine. I never really got pinball machines. I was never a huge arcade kid anyway. But I was always interested in the arcade machines, and today I can look at these and I can understand why people go crazy for them, for the nostalgia of them, for the like you know, the physical playable artifacts that they are. Very cool.
Okay, Rob, I'm currently looking at a big internet list of licensed pinball games, and there are so many that you really would not have expected. I'm going to name three, and you tell me which of these is not a real licensed pinball cabinet.
Okay, all right.
Okay. Apollo 13, Aerosmith, Baywatch.
I'm going to say Apollo 13 is not a pinball machine.
No, it is. They're all real.
Oh my goodness. Wow. All right. Well, you know, I thought this quiz was going to go in a different direction and you were going to ask me to name one film that I wish was a pinball machine.
Okay.
And I didn't even have to think about it. It's going to be Chud. Please tell me Chud was a pinball machine.
John Hurd's face scrawled up on the background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In like subway tunnels. You can imagine like, it seems like they could have done something really cool with that. Maybe they did. Did they?
Get the Pinball Factory on the phone. I think you've got a white hot idea there that it can't lose.
All right, but it doesn't exist that we know of. All right, well he has some more stuff he wants to share about pinballs, and so I'm going to read through them here real quickly.
Okay.
We also have Meteor, another late 70s classic made by Stern Electronics. Stern Electronics was renowned for making beautiful, fast, and cheaply made games that have recently become darlings of the U.S. tournament scene. I'm just so many things to floor me in this. I did not know there was like you still had like pinball wizard competitions. In appearance, it doesn't seem to be related to a licensed property. The art is great, but a bit generic, but is actually a direct tie-in to the 1979 Sean Connery film.
I've never even heard of this movie.
Meteor?
Are they trolling us? Is this real? Natalie Wood, Henry Fonda, Martin Landau, Carl Malden, huh?
Yeah, 1979. You know, I guess the thing with some of these big budget films, especially some of these big disaster films, they weren't good. They haven't really stood the test of time. So nobody thinks about them today. Like I really am not up on Meteor, but I feel like I've run across multiple films like this from more or less this time period and researching stuff for Weird House. And I'm like, oh, well, I did not know that existed and I have no interest in seeing it.
This is an American International Pictures phenomenon. Yeah. Okay, I think this may need to go on the list for Weird House. It might be at least be something we should check out and see if it's worth doing.
Yeah, I'm happy to look into it. Okay, here's another one. We also have The Shadow, licensed from that fair to middling Alec Baldwin film. This is a highly collectible and inspired game that's on my wish list. It commands a high price and is an excellent representation of all the greatest elements of 90s pinball design. Now, this is a film I'm very familiar with because I believe this was a Russell McKay film. Oh. I remember being very excited for it when it came out and I was a kid. And then I remember finding it somewhat disappointing, but not for reasons I can necessarily articulate. I haven't seen it forever. I just remember it did not win me over the way I wanted it to, despite a great cast.
Speaking of underwhelming and great cast, you'll never guess the next movie that they made a pinball machine out of.
Yes, he continues. Finally, I know you are both fond of the film Krull. I saw it in the cinema back in the day and loved it. The pinball machine associated with this license has the legend of being a game that only made it to the prototype. It has the crazy feature of a second full-size playfield located underneath the main playfield that is viewed via a distorting mirror from above. The mad creativity behind the design has sadly not been repeated since.
Rob, I dug up another high-def picture of this and put it in the outline for you. Okay, so I can tell what's going on the backboard. There we've got our main characters from Krull, or at least one of them. I don't remember. I don't know who this lady with the big hair and the wizard staff is.
That's our lady.
That's
lady Krull.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Remember the beast
yes.
has her like dolled up for, I guess, their wedding, you know?
Oh, okay.
But I do. And so she ends up looking like this.
There's the Widow of the Web, the big spider. I see that. And I see some people on horses. I guess people ride horses in the movie. And then, yeah, in the middle of the playfield, there is, I can't even tell what I'm looking at, but it's like a big, it looks like just a big glass pane. So this is like a window into a lower level of play.
Wow. It does seem ambitious, maybe too ambitious. Like one wonders, glancing this, is this something that was as fun to use? Was it innovation over fun, or was it a situation where it was fun and innovative but more difficult to manufacture? I don't know.
You know, they really missed an opportunity here to have in the middle of the playfield a five-sided star of flippers that you could all flip simultaneously.
Oh,
it would be the glaive of flippers.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
They should let me design pinball cabinets. How do you get into this line of work?
Well, it's got to be a very specialized field at this point, right? But man, it looks very cool. Anyway, apologies for the essay, he writes, but I actually host a podcast called The Pinball Tapes on the Pinball Network, which is a historical-based podcast that focuses on individual games. I'm deep into the hobby as both a restorer and player, and so I tend to get a bit verbose. I'll admit my podcast is in its infancy, but I'm really enjoying the ride. Thank you for your time, gents. I really love what you do, and I'm very grateful for you introducing me to a world of weird and wonderful auteurs that I didn't know existed. Cheers, Zach.
Well, thank you so much for the email, Zach, and best of luck with your podcast. It sounds like you really know your stuff.
Yeah, it seems like it's a very interesting world to explore, for sure. All right, well, I think we're going to have to close it up right there. I mean, we have to go off and like look and see if they made like a Chronicles of Riddick pinball machine now, and so forth. there's so many films that seem like they would be just perfect for this kind of treatment. I mean, Chronicles of Riddick is basically a pinball machine, so the adaptation writes itself. In the meantime, certainly reach out to us. I think we told you some ways to do that at the beginning. We'll share the email here in a second. Just a reminder, listener mail episodes published on Mondays, core episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind on Tuesday and Thursday, short form Artifact or Monster Fact on Wednesday, and on Fridays, we set aside most serious concerns to just talk about a weird film on Weird House Cinema.
Huge thanks to our audio producer, JJ Posway. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.